This is MSO News. I'm Rick Moore, and from the mayor's office now in Gloucester, we talk with Gloucester Mayor Greg Verga and welcome him back in. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning to you, Rick.
You know, before we get started on official business, recently David Brown passed away, and he's a well-known musician and from all accounts a great guy. I read a lot about him. I may have even had him in school, but I can't remember, and I didn't know him as a musician, but had you had, in your musical interlude, your musical journey, I should say, not interlude, did you ever come across David?
Yeah, I'll get to go in the Wayback Machine. So I was probably in middle school, and it was what there used to be a show on TV called Solid Gold, where they would like play the top 10 hits and sometimes have the bands on, and one time Billy Joel was on. And my oldest brother, Mick, was with me. And I think they're playing You May Be Right. And then there's a guitar solo. And Dave Brown, his mug right there on the face. And I remember my brother saying, "Oh, Brownie, that's awesome." You know, and as somebody who was just starting to play guitar, it was, like, really cool. And first of all, Dave's father was my dentist. My whole family used to go to Doc Brown. So I knew of him. But seeing him on TV that time sort of was really influential in me growing up as a guitar player. And then, you know, I over the years, I'd see him because I played at Jalapenos, you know, he and Dan King and others, and you just got to know him to say hello and chit-chat, but, mm-hmm. you know, never really hung out. But last year, during the 400th events, there was a fundraiser at the Blue Collar at the Gloucester House, and Dave was playing with Madhouse, and sitting in with Madhouse, and I was invited to play, too. And so I got to play bass with Dave Brown, and you know, I never would have imagined that when I was like 13 or 14 years old. And so this weekend on Saturday they had the tribute concert for him down at Stage Fort, and it was a mob scene, probably about 1,000 spectators and pretty much every local musician you can think of. And I was fortunate enough to be invited again to sit in with Madhouse to play, and so it was a lot of fun being on stage there with those guys who are much more skilled musicians than I, but Dave left a big mark for the musicians and pretty much everybody in the city.
Yeah, and you know, having done our previous program with you, I am amazed at the amount of talent in this city, and so for David to be even beyond that is quite a tribute to his musicianship, and again, from all accounts, a very nice man.
Yes.
All righty, let's
certainly be missed.
Absolutely. Okay, all right, let's get down to it now. Big political, what's the word I'm looking for? Issue, I guess, in Gloucester. Yeah, is the 3A zoning, the MBTA 3A zoning. There's a lot of passion on both sides, so how about an update? I know there's a meeting at City Hall today, Tuesday, with the City Council, so maybe you can bring us up to speed.
Right, so what I would urge people to do is if you click into the Gloucester website, gloucester-ma.gov, right on the home page at the top of the screen there's a red button and bold letters, 3A zoning info, and you can pretty much look back in history and see all that's been going on, meetings, links to meetings, any documents related to it. So that's a good starting point. I mean, tonight's the ending point, so if people are just tuning in, it's going to be info only. But at least it's all there for them to sort of do a little historical check on it. And if they have questions that are still in their minds, they could be answered there. So the council had a public hearing, a joint meeting with the planning board over the course of two meetings this past Thursday, and I believe 2 weeks before that. They completed the public hearing, closed it out, and now the planning board closed out their meeting and voted to adjourn. So now it's fully in the hands of the city council. So tonight the city council is planning to take the motions, have their discussion, and have a vote. Two city councilors, Jeff Worthley and Marjorie Grace, had to recuse themselves because there are three overlays that create our 3A plan, and they live within one of them. So they checked in with the state ethics, and the advice was that they should step aside. So that leaves seven members to vote, and I believe a simple majority is all that's required by law. So, it's, in a nutshell, the major change is allowing by right in those districts to go from a one to two family or a two to a three family. where right now you need a special permit and go through zoning board or city council. So the thought is the vision from the state, and this started with the Baker administration, carried over into the Healey administration, is that, you know, we do have, not the vision, the fact is we have a housing crisis. We're way behind in housing starts in this state, and this is the theory is this will help create new housing and alleviate some of that problem that we're dealing with. I personally don't think that this time next year, after this is in place for a year, there's going to be much of a visual difference. Some of the pushback from some of the opponents has been that this is a gift to developers, but, you know, I don't see a developer buying, as we were just talking about before we went on, the housing prices are about, $500,000. I don't see a developer spending $500,000 on a single family to spend another $150,000 to create a second unit and see much profit margin there. However, if you have, younger kids, out of college, just starting their families, or older parents, you might want to add a unit for them, since, as we know, the housing options aren't really that great out there. So it's difficult for a young person to find a house they can afford to move into. It's difficult for seniors to find something they can downsize into. So I see that as the most likely scenario, is that the more homeowners are going to be the ones taking advantage of this new easing of rules versus developers. But some of the other things, in addition to adding to the extra units, this creates a zone around the Maplewood, the Willowwood, across from McDonald's, that area. So if at some point the housing authority decided they wanted to go up a story, it's now allowed. There's also a space up at Gloucester Crossing that could be made into a housing. I think it's most likely going to be affordable housing if we're lucky. But it's a start, and the bottom line is this is not optional. As some of the opponents have been saying, this is optional. We can simply opt out of it. It is not. The governor, lieutenant governor, the legislature, and most importantly, the attorney general have made it very clear that this is a mandate that cities and towns within the MBTA communities are required to be in compliance with. And there are 177 of us, and we took an oath to uphold the laws of the Commonwealth, and this is one of those laws. So tonight the council, it is my hope that they will vote to uphold the laws of the Commonwealth and pass this. Otherwise, we're at risk of legal action, which the AG's office has already done with the town of Milton, and potential loss of multiple grants, and the list of grants keeps on growing.
Is there a potential, Mr. Mayor, for developers to come in at some point and develop high-rises such as on Rantoul Street in Beverly, that kind of thing?
This doesn't allow, it doesn't change anything in terms of height. It's all about the units, the by-right additional units. Because I've made it pretty clear to everybody, people come in to talk about projects, everything about whether it's affordable housing or, projects in the downtown area. I don't support high-rise. I think if you look around town, I think the tallest building is probably the hospital, which is maybe four stories, maybe five, I don't know. But that's a single tall building. I think the Halyard is the exception. I wasn't in office when all that went down, so I'm not going to really comment on it. But it's less obtrusive where it is over there, in basically on the other side of an industrial park. But I do not want to see high-rise buildings downtown. Last thing I want to see is some developer coming in and buying up, say, five single families in a row and building a high-rise. But as we talked about earlier, the economics aren't there for them to make the money to do it. So this new zoning does not change any of the other requirements that are already on the books, in terms of setbacks and height and parking requirements and things like that. So it's just basically the by-right for the additional unit.
Okay, let's move on to the update on the Gloucester Comprehensive Plan that you and your administration have been working on diligently for the last couple of years.
Right. So when I was running for office, this became part of the conversation, and it's sort of an offshoot of the pushback on the 3A law, because one of the comments, and I think it was a valid one, was we really shouldn't be doing major changes without updating our master plan. And the last master plan was called Plan 2000, so as you can see, it's 24 years old. So I agreed, and during the campaign in 2021, I said that would be one of the goals, is to get our new master plan up and running. And shortly after taking office, we did get a consultant in place and got the ball rolling on that. And over the past several months, there's been a lot of work, meetings here at City Hall, throughout the city, people having their own meetings at a box, at their own, whether it's in their own homes or other, you know, community halls around the city. And the consultant took all that information and put together a sort of a summary of it. And so the next step is a technical working session, which will be happening, working sessions, which will be happening in October. And so it's going to allow them to refine the draft strategies and narrow them down. So see what the highest priorities are based on the input from the public. And so the plan is to have about 75 representatives from cities, boards and commissions, community stakeholders, you know, that could be nonprofits, businesses, and other organizations to participate in the technical working sessions. And then they'll have those summarized over the course of the next month or so, and then a citywide survey will go out. So I just want to urge people to keep an eye out for that survey to, you know, have your input, because the plan is that this will be the blueprint for the next 5 years. It can't be a blueprint for the next 25 years because, as you know, in the year 1999 into 2000, when we were working on the last one, it was a very different world in terms of technology. You know, the internet was in its infancy, and email wasn't big, and the World Wide Web wasn't really what it is, and this world of apps and other things. So it's a chance to modernize it, and I would urge whoever comes after me in the next few years as mayor to look at it a lot sooner than year 24.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bathing season is over in terms of the beaches. Summer is officially over. We have fall and autumn both astronomically and unofficially underway right now as we talk on October 1. Are the waters being tested still at the beaches? And if so, why are they being tested now? And what's the result? What are we looking at?
Well, we're required to test the bathing beaches during the beach season. And the bathing beaches basically means beaches you go into the water at. And we had a presentation to the city council, which we've shared the link with you so you can post it so people can watch the meeting we had with the Joe Rosa, our chairman of the Board of Health, Dominique Curley, our the health director, and some of her staff. And they basically did the presentation because you recall when I came into office, there were issues at the creek in at Stage 4 at Good Harbor. And so we had hired a group to do some research on that. And they came back with a report, very scientific, but it did not say, and some people who've been very critical of where we've been on this are not being very factual when they say that we ignored the report. The fact of the matter is the report did not say, here's your problem, here's your solution. They said, it could be this, it could be that, you might want to try this, this, and this. And so that's exactly what we did. Some of the theory was that the problems at the creek were maybe coming from leaky sewer pipes or people who are still on septic tanks or cesspools nearby. And so we went through, the city, the DPW did quite extensive work throughout that region around Good Harbor Beach, fixing sewer lines. You know, we have cameras that we run through, the little robots that, to look for problems, and we repaired a bunch of that. We found, I'm not going to name the specific roads or streets, but there were some areas of town that still had septic tanks or cesspools. We were able to get them either fixed or, fortunately for those residents, the sewer was nearby, so they were able to tie into the sewer. But the biggest takeaway from this most recent presentation was we did some health department sent to labs, and we did DNA testing, and they were able to determine that for the most part, it's avian fecal matter. Sorry to be so graphic, but so it's basically the birds, whether it's the seagulls or more likely, I think, the Canada geese that are all around. So that's kind of a relief that it's not humans. There was we had a presentation earlier last year about when we first got the report that my office did over Zoom, one person called in, and I think he made it up. He says, I saw human feces floating in the creek. That's a bunch of baloney. So if people do see things in the creek, they might want to point it out to the health department right away. But the work that has been done has proven that it is not, for the most part, human feces. It is fecal matter from the birds. So the next steps are, where do we go from here? And there are some steps we could take with the birds, but obviously you have to go through the state on that. But overall, we had very few closings of our beaches this season. The creek was probably closed the most of any of the beaches or areas, and that was probably just, I don't know, maybe three or four times. I think Pavilion was closed once, and one of the beaches along the boulevard. But Wingshiek and Good Harbor were not closed. I think Plum was closed one day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what happened throughout the summer at some of the other beaches in our area, from the Boston area up to the New Hampshire border, there were quite a bit of closures. So we were fortunate. I'm not trying to say we don't have an issue that we have to keep an eye on, but it isn't as bad as we thought it could have been, and it is a relief to see what the actual cause is, and we'll keep up with it. The testing will continue. It's required during the season, but and those results are reported on a state website, so it's all public, and we'll continue to keep an eye on it to make sure that everybody's aware. The big thing, though, is, you know, after some of the beaches were closed, in particular Plum Cove, the health department's required to put up signage, basically, you know, 8.5 by 11 sheets, saying don't swim, and people were just taking down the signs and swimming. So it's kind of, you know, there's a bit of personal responsibility there, too. But we do have no reports, which you'll find in the presentation, from local pediatricians or other medical facilities saying that they had illnesses which were related to the beaches, because all that stuff is reported, as you'll hear Dominique say in the report, station, that it's all reported by the medical providers to the state, and that info is provided back, if there's any communicable disease info, provided back to the local cities and towns.
Well, when I read that report, I was ready to blame the piping plovers, but I guess Canada geese makes more sense.
Yeah. If we had as many plovers as we do the Canada geese, then we wouldn't have...
Yeah, well, the plovers, what? They're like a half an inch tall. Anyway, it is October. Everybody's looking down 128 a little bit to Salem right now. However, there is a Halloween party being planned here in Gloucester?
Yes. So for many years, there's been a Halloween party that has been basically the mayor's Halloween party, so I'm happy to have inherited it. And for the last 3 years, my wife Kelly has been chairing the committee for this this endeavor, you know, with help from Leo Francis, Melissa Cox, the Community Impact Unit, Barry Pett, and a bunch of really dedicated people who just started talking about this like about a month and a half ago. They talk about it all year, but they started meeting about a month and a half ago. And it was pretty successful the last couple of years that we've done it. It's been at Stage 4. We've been fortunate to have great weather. It's scheduled for Saturday, October 19th from 12 to 3. The rain date's the 26th, same time, same place. But there'll be the usual stuff. We'll have Leo Francis as DJ. We'll have the touch a truck with police, fire, and other apparatus. Hay rides, the open door will be there. There'll be face painting, popcorn, pizza, and a contest, costume contest. So, and one thing we started last year is we eliminated the plastic bottles, and we have a water refill station. So we urge people to bring their own water bottle. We'll have, recyclable, compostable cups if they don't bring them. But, what we found after my first year in office, two Halloweens ago, is, you know, we'd find half-filled, or I guess half-emptied, water bottles all over the place, which was a waste of water and a waste of plastic and lots of pollution. So it was very successful last year with the Bring Your Own Bottle. So we urge people to come. It's a lot of fun. There'll be music. There'll be prizes. And come in costume. And parents and kids alike. It's always a great time.
All right. That's Gloucester Mayor Greg Verga. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.